And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great show for you today. We're just going to dive right into it, obviously catching up on news and all that kind of stuff. But our deep dive is going to be on gun violence and how technology can actually help us in this situation, because Congress won't. Stick around for that. You don't want to miss it. And let's get going. And in privacy news, we have to talk about a new absolutely horrific privacy violator that basically is coming for the Clearview AI throne. Now, you might have heard me talk about Clearview AI and the massive just facial recognition database they've created on billions of people worldwide. It is absolutely a privacy nightmare. This one is worse. We're going to get into this, and this is absolutely insane. Now, this is coming from the New York Times, and here's what's going on. For $29.99 a month, a website called PimEyes offers a rather alarming service, the ability to search for any face you wish, and in seconds, the site will find obscure photos that would usually never see the light of day. Now, here's how this works. Basically, you upload a photo of a face, check a box agreeing to the terms of services, and then get a grid of photos of faces deemed similar with links to where they appear on the internet. So the New York Times, author of this report that I'm very heavily quoting and paraphrasing from, used PimEyes on the faces of a dozen of their journalists, obviously with their consent, to see what they would get. Now, PimEyes found photos of every single journalist, some that even the journalists had never seen before, even when they were wearing sunglasses or a mask, obviously during COVID, or their faces were turned away from the camera in an image that was used to conduct the search. Now, PimEyes found one reporter dancing at an art museum a decade ago and crying after being proposed to. That's a photo that apparently the journalist or the reporter didn't particularly like, but the photographer she used had decided to use it in his advertising on Yelp. Now, a tech reporter's younger self was spotted in a large crowd at the Coachella Music Festival in 2011. One of the foreign correspondents appeared in a ton of wedding photos, apparently, and in the blurry background of a photo taken by somebody else at a Greek airport in 2019, meaning he was in the background as somebody was taking a picture of somebody else, and this caught him. Now, a journalist's past life in a rock band was also unearthed. He didn't think that was going to survive. Another one's preferred summer camp getaway was there, and on and on and on. But here's the thing, though, and this is what makes this difficult and a little more alarming, is that unlike Clearview AI, which, as I mentioned, is a similar facial recognition tool only available to law enforcement and those that Clearview sells it to, because we now know they go beyond law enforcement, PimEyes does not include results from social media sites, meaning they say or claim they're not data mining the Facebooks of the world for your pictures. These images that PimEyes basically surfaced and had come to light for all these journalists instead came from news articles, wedding photography pages, review sites, blogs, and even adult content sites. Most of the journalists, most of the matches for the dozen journalists' faces were correct. For the women, however, the incorrect photos often came from adult sites, which obviously was unsettling in the suggestion that it could be them. And obviously it was not, as they all confirmed. There you go. A tech executive, interestingly enough, that was interviewed by the New York Times and asked not to be identified, said that he was using PimEyes fairly regularly, primarily to identify people who harass him on Twitter and then use their real photos. And basically he's using their real photos on their account, but not their real name. So basically he can get their information as these people are harassing him or sending him threats. Another PimEyes user who asked to stay anonymous said that he used the tool to find the real identities of actresses from adult films and to search basically for explicit photos of his Facebook friends, meaning he's basically stalking adult film actresses. That's a bit of a problem. I really think that is. Now, some are labeling PIMEYE's though as an extortion scheme. Now, here's what's going on with this, because the article talks about the story of Cher Scarlett. I'm not going to go into all of the details, but here's the gist of what happened in this Scarlett. PIMEYE's unearthed a decades-old trauma with links to exactly where those particular photos could be found on the internet. They were sprinkled in among some of the more recent portraits of Ms. Scarlett, who works in the labor rights movement and has been the subject of media coverage for a high-profile worker revolt that she recently led at Apple. Now, worried about how some people would react to those images, Ms. Scarlett began looking to how to get them removed, and that's an experience she described to both CNN and in a Medium post. When she clicked on one of the explicit photos on PIMEYE's, a menu popped up offering a link to the page, a link to the website where it appeared, and an option to, quote, exclude from public results, end quote, on PIMEYE's. But the exclusion, Ms. Scarlett quickly discovered, was available only to subscribers who paid for the quote-unquote protect plans, which cost from $89.99 to $299 per month. Quote, it's essentially extortion, said Ms. Scarlett, who eventually signed up for the most expensive plan. Now, Grigory Gabranadze, and I apologize, I am totally butchering that name, so we're just going to call him Grigory. He is the owner of PIMEYE's, which is out of the country of Georgia, if you didn't know. Grigory disagreed with that characterization. He pointed to a free tool for deleting results from the PIMEYE's index that is not prominently advertised on the site. He also provided a receipt showing that PIMEYE's had indeed refunded Ms. Scarlett for the $299 plan last month. That would have been April. Now, PIMEYE's has tens of thousands of subscribers, according to Grigory, with most visitors on the site coming from the United States and Europe. It makes the bulk of its money from subscribers to its protect service, which includes help from PIMEYE's support staff and getting photos taken down from external sites. PIMEYE's also has a free opt-out as well for people to have data about themselves removed from the site, including the search images of their faces. To opt out, Ms. Scarlett provided a photo of her teenage self and a scan of her government-issued ID. At the beginning of April, she received a confirmation that her opt-out request had been accepted, but when the Times ran a PIMEYE search of Ms. Scarlett's face with her permission a month later, there were more than 100 results, including those ones that were traumatic to her. Now, Grigory said that this was a quote-unquote sad story and that opting out didn't block a person's face from being searched. Instead, it blocks from PIMEYE search results any photo of faces, quote, with high similarity level, end quote, at the time of the opt-out, meaning that people need to regularly opt out with multiple photos of themselves if they hope to stay out of a PIMEYE search. That seems like it's a complete uphill battle for every human ever. Now, Grigory also said explicit photos were particularly tricky, comparing their tendency to proliferate online to the mythical beast known as Hydra. Quote, cut off one head and two others appear, end quote. And that, I completely agree with him, with Grigory, in that once those things are out there, they spread prolifically. You have no idea who's downloaded copies, shared, posted, reposted, et cetera, et cetera. That is just an endless game of whack-a-mole. Now, Grigory also said that he wanted quote-unquote ethical usage of PIMEYE's, meaning that people search only for their own faces and not for those of strangers. But PIMEYE did little to enforce this goal beyond basically a box that a searcher must click, asserting that the face being uploaded is their own. PIMEYE's does not audit for this, though Grigory said the site would bar users with search activity, quote, beyond anything logical, end quote, describing one with more than 1,000 searches in a day as an example. But did that CEO that is using that to find Twitter followers, or that other guy that is looking up adult actresses consistently, are they getting banned? Nobody said anything about that in this. Now, Grigory is relying basically on users to do what's right and mention that anyone who searched someone else's face without permission would be breaking European privacy law. But in that vein, we can look at the privacy disaster that Clearview AI has been for basically doing the same thing, but in a different way. ClearEye faced very serious trouble in Europe and around the world. Privacy regulators in Canada, Australia, and parts of Europe have declared Clearview's database of 20 billion images illegal and ordered them to delete their citizens' photos. Italy and Britain issued multi-million-dollar fines. The German Data Protection Agency announced an investigation into ClearEye, but they also announced an investigation into PIMEYE's last year for possible violations of Europeans' law, the GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation, which includes strict rules around the use of biometric data. Now, Grigori said he's not concerned about privacy regulators because PIMEYES operates differently. He described it as being almost like a digital card catalog, saying that they're not storing photos or individual faces, but rather the URLs or links for individual images associated with facial features. It's all public, he said, and PIMEYES just instructs users to search only for their faces, and there you go. I think that's bunk, because if it's instantly finding, let's say, a million pictures of me, then they've got it. They've got to have some kind of repository there in some way, shape, or form. So it obviously is a complete mess. We'll see where that goes. But this, I think, is going to be the new white whale in my nightmares. I'm telling you right now, it's not looking good. So that is your news, or your terrifying privacy news of the week. And in education news, we have to talk about education apps, because they are selling your kids' data to third parties and tracking them. Now, here's what's going on. An amends and detailed report released basically a week ago Tuesday by the nonprofit advocacy group Human Rights Watch says that in 49 countries it studied, 146 of the 164 ed tech products that governments sometimes recommended engaged in data harvesting or otherwise monitored children's activities. Now, these platforms used tracker technology that monitored their activities outside of the classroom, oftentimes tracking their whereabouts, identifying their friends and family, and otherwise harvesting data that they sold to advertising companies. Now, this report, according to lead researcher Hai Jun Han, focused on apps or sites working on Google Android, where researchers downloaded the product and created user accounts when necessary in order to track how their data was used. Google Android obviously is the much larger of the two major platforms, iPhone and Android, but Android also lends itself a lot more easily to research and analyzing than the closed ecosystem of iOS. That's the operating system that runs Apple. But understand, if it's happening on Apple, it's going to be happening on it's probably going to be happening on Apple as well. Now, the report notes that programs like Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Google Meet, or Cisco WebEx were variously used for remote classwork by districts in places like California and Texas, despite them not being explicitly designed for children's use. Some of those programs are known for tracking user data. Zoom itself has had its feet held to the fire over face reading AI, you know, encryption they didn't have, all these kinds of things. But the other programs that they talked about were advertised for kids' use. So Texas uses the website ST Math, which Human Rights Watch or HRW researchers said used key logging tracking technology to send children's data to third-party companies, including Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Shopify. Trackers were found not only on the site's homepage, but on the pages offering math games for pre-kindergartners and first graders. The report further noted that Texas school districts used education programs like Schoolology and Seesaw that embedded software development kits or SDKs onto students' devices, which could be then used to track data for the sake of advertising. So a lot of developers will take the software development kit of like a Facebook or a Google and integrate that technology into its app, because that is a money-making thing for them, meaning as they're sending this information and data from the app you're using that has nothing to do with Facebook or Google is still collecting that information and paying the app developers for your information as you're using an app, again, that has no alleged association with Facebook, but here we are. Now, the Washington Post reported that PowerSchool, which developed Schoolology, denied that it was tracking students, referencing the company's privacy policy, though the company does use third-party tools to show targeted ads. Some researchers and teachers were blowing the data privacy whistle long before this report was released, though. Researchers quoted Texas algebra teacher Abby Rufer, who told them that she was concerned that 60 to 70% of her school students had a family member either deported by or were in the custody of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, making it an unacceptable and, quote, dangerous situation to put these kids in. Now, this isn't nearly the first time companies have come under fire for harvesting data. I mean, look at TikTok, look at Facebook, you know, all of these things, even small developers. There was a Muslim prayer app that was sending information back to the U.S. government. So obviously everybody's data mining, everybody, but In EdTech's case, that's Education Technology's case, HRW said their products pieced together data they got from children, quote, to deduce each child's characteristics, behaviors, and interests, end quote, for the sake of targeted advertising. The advocacy group analyzed these products between March and August of last year, and the report's authors acknowledge that the program's practices may have changed in the years since. Odds are they haven't, unless they were caught, unless there's a whistleblower or a change of ownership. That's my own opinion there. Now, some companies denied that they were tracking children's data or claimed that they were not intended for use by children. Zoom, for example, could make that claim. Same with Microsoft Teams. Some school districts defended using these products, saying that the study included homepages for these products compared to the program pages that use less trackers. But researchers rebutted and noted that in order to access those programs deeper into the site, you had to go through the homepage, meaning you're going to, you know, powerschool.com or seesaw.com or whatever it is and logging in. And so while there's a ton of trackers there, you're getting tracked as you're going deeper into the portal of that school. So that's kind of a debunk thing. School districts, I don't believe you. Now, Human Rights Watch also, though, put the onus on governments for promoting softwares to schools, quote, that handled children's personal data in ways that risked or infringed on their rights by making the use compulsory. Meaning, if you're in that school district and your school district is using Seesaw, for example, and I know actually firsthand that one of the school districts in my area uses that, they don't necessarily realize that they are being data mined. This is not what they do. So obviously, this is a huge problem. We have here in the United States what is known as the Child Online Privacy Protection Act, or COPPA, which is supposed to protect children under the age of 13 from these kinds of things, as well as, basically keeping them off adult sites, you know, those kinds of things. But this is obviously of deep concern because data mining is a multi-billion dollar operation worldwide every single year. And if they're data mining children and the Googles and the Facebooks of the world have this, they're going to have this information for an absolute ton of time. And when those kids get old enough and they start, God forbid, making their own Facebook accounts, Facebook is now matching them from cradle to the grave. So this is a huge problem. I hope that everybody just realizes this. And if you've got kids in school, I would highly recommend reading Human Rights Watch's report. I would also recommend going to your school district and saying, hey, like, you know, I'm not trying to complain here, but do you know that these products that we're using are data mining our kids? We got to do something about that. So there you go. You can't say you haven't been told, but EdTech products are data mining your children, and that should be a huge problem for you. And in alcohol tech news, and this is actually really interesting, I had no idea that counterfeit alcohol was such a huge racket. Some of these bottles go for $1,000 plus, you know, for alcohol, and there are a lot of counterfeiters out there. And so in order to combat this, and you got to leave it to the Aussies, researchers at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia, have basically created essentially a smelling artificial intelligence. Now, the prototype that they basically put together is called Nose. It's N-O-S dot E, and it was able to identify the differences between three blended malt whiskeys and three single malt whiskeys made by various known companies like Johnny Walker and Macallan and Ardbeg and all those. The prototype was 100% accurate on the region, 96.5% accurate on what the brand name was, and 92.31% on the style of those whiskeys. So obviously that is a huge, huge thing. And basically what makes this really interesting is that what they're doing is they have 8 gas sensors that can sniff a vial of whiskey. It then evaluates that basically via odor molecules and then sends that to machine learning, which then identifies the alcohol. The nice part about this is that usually it takes hours and hours and hours to identify counterfeits, whereas this can do it in minutes, possibly seconds, thus helping the counterfeit culture that is out there, or rather defending against it. So this is actually really good news for those criminals out there, and you think you're buying that gorgeous $500 bottle of whatever for whatever reason, and it ends up being fake. You don't know it. You just got ripped off. This is going to help. I think that's cool. So that is your quick alcohol tech news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And the last 2 weeks in data breaches, they've just been off the rails. It's so hard to keep up with these things. I do these once a week, the Breaches of the Week video and podcast, and it always gets longer. But this couple of weeks has been just kind of nuts. And if you've got a breach for me, please send it my way, and I'm happy to give you a shout out here. And this week's participants were Jason Dance, Barrett Peterson, Sarah Harpins, William Lassers, and Stephen Doper or Dopper. And Stephen, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your last name, but thank you all. And let's start with Parker Hannifin. If you didn't know who they are an American company specializing in motion and control technologies whose customers include smaller companies like Airbus, Boeing, Rolls-Royce, and Lockheed Martin. Parker has now acknowledged a security breach that precipitated the theft of employee data. Now, last month, the Conti ransomware gang released on the dark web what looked like data to be stolen from Parker Hannifin. And after they conducted an investigation, they basically found that files accessed by the attackers may have contained information regarding not only its current 58,000 employees, but also former employees, their dependents, and members of Parker's group health insurance plan. So anybody who falls within that scope may have had the following data stolen: your name, social security number, date of birth, address, driver's license, passport, bank and routing numbers, online account usernames and passwords, health insurance enrollment information, dates of coverage and service, healthcare provider names, claims information, and medical and clinical treatment information. So if you work or have worked for Parker Hannifin, you definitely want to check in. Moving on, let's talk about publishing giant Nikkei, because they disclosed that their group's headquarters in Singapore was hit by a ransomware attack on May 13th of this year. Quote, unauthorized access to the server was first detected on May 13, prompting an internal probe. Now, Nikkei says it's currently investigating if the attackers accessed any of the customer data that was likely stored on those impacted servers. The media giant said that until now, it has found no evidence of a leak while investigating this ransomware attack. We'll see where that goes. Nikkei, one of the largest publishers in the world out of Asia, getting hit. Moving on, this is not going to be fun if you basically have kids in school, but a teacher evaluation vendor known as Batale for Kids was targeted in a ransomware attack on December 1st of last year, and now a lot of school districts that use Batale for Kids have to disclose. The only one right now, though, that I could find that is basically putting out that they were using this is one of the largest school districts in the entire United States, with over 500,000 students and 60,000 employees, and that would be the Chicago Public School District. So if you have kids that go to CPS, you definitely want to check in. Moving on, let's talk about the Texas Department of Insurance, because the personal information of almost 2 million Texans who filed claims with the Texas Department of Insurance was exposed and publicly available for nearly 3 years, according to a state audit. Now, the department said that the personal information of 1.8 million workers who had filed compensation claims, including social security numbers, addresses, dates of birth, phone numbers, and information about their injuries, was accessible online to basically the public from March of 2019 through January of this year. We are talking about years of exposure for the Texas Department of Insurance. They caught this in an audit, and on March 24th this year, when their audit was completed, is essentially when they acknowledge that they had this issue and disclose it to the public. So if you are listening to me right now, deep in the heart of Texas, and you use the Texas Department of Insurance, you better check in. Moving on, let's talk about a company called Trust Stamp. This is a facial recognition company that has a $7.2 million contract with ICE. That's the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Wing of the United States government. They left personal information, that would be Trust Stamp, left personal information of several dozen people unsecured on a breached database, according to Business Insider. Now, this information includes names, birth dates, home addresses, and driver's license information. An anonymous tipster who said they were a security researcher contacted Business Insider and disclosed this data breach. Insider confirmed the authenticity of the data with the people named in the leak. Trust Stamp then confirmed the security vulnerability breach to Business Insider. Obviously, that is a huge issue. ICE deals with a lot of undocumented people who tend to be the most legally vulnerable people in the United States. And so there you go. We might have a data breach of citizens or non-citizens. And obviously, that is of a concern. Trust Stamp getting you hit. Moving on, let's head on over to Malaysia, because we're going to talk about the National Registration Department Department of the entire country of Malaysia because they possibly had a data breach. Now, this is interesting. Following a recent report, that personal data belonging to 22.5 million Malaysians was put up for sale, Malaysia's Home Affairs Minister, Dato Seri Hamzah Zainuddin, and I'm sure I'm butchering that last name, denies that the data came from the National Register Department, known as JPN. Now, he said that Home Affairs, the ministry, will investigate the individuals behind the sale of the personal data. Now, to recap, an individual offered to sell a database of 22.5 million Malaysians, which claim to be obtained via My Identity API. Now, the 160 gig database claims to cover all Malaysian adults who were born between 1940 and 2004. The sale was posted in an online forum that acts as a marketplace for leaks, and sellers claim to have the same claim to be the same party behind the sale of last year's data involving 4 million Malaysians. Now, to basically prove that they had this database and it was legitimate, the seller even provided sample data belonging to the home minister himself. Now, the record contains full name, address, date of birth, gender, IC number, race, religion, as well as the photo in the IC, which I have to imagine is like a national identity card. But you're looking at basically every adult in Malaysia having their information dumped out to the world. That is an entire country hit. That is insane, but that is where we are this week. So, moving on. Let's talk about Verizon. Yes, that Verizon. They experienced a data breach where full names, email addresses, corporate ID numbers, and phone numbers of Verizon employees were compromised, according to a report from Motherboard by Vice News. Now, Verizon also has confirmed the data breach, though the company has said it will not engage with the attacker because Verizon does not believe the information is sensitive. Now, as to how this breach came to light, it was a result of a hacker reaching out to Motherboard to share the information with the publication. So, possibly a researcher, obviously not going for money. There is no clear indication of just how up-to-date the information is, but it does appear to contain a mix of current and previous employees. This is like the fourth or fifth data breach for the last couple of years for Verizon. Still not as bad as T-Mobile, but Verizon, get it together. Moving on, let's talk about another famous platform, Twitter. Now, I did a video podcast on this one last week or so as you're listening to this, but here's a quick recap of that more extensive video and podcast that I did. Federal regulators, about a week ago Wednesday or so, as you're listening to this, announced that Twitter will pay a $150 million fine to settle allegations that it deceptively used email addresses and phone numbers it had collected to target advertising in one of the largest privacy settlements the federal regulators have ever reached with Twitter.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.